Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to a new episode of the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and we are in the thick of harvest, officially. Before we do a proper long-form harvest update for you all, how the season is going, the outlook, what is currently happening, a few quick announcements, as usual. Please continue to share, like, subscribe to the show. The best place to find it will be wherever you can find your podcasts. I believe we're posted on Spotify, Apple Podcasts are the two most popular versions. You can also check out the video version of this and listen to it on YouTube as well, which is also where you can find all of our harvest and cellar updates that are a little bit more short form. Speaking of which, be sure to follow us on all of our social networks. That's at MTGA Wines. We are on the Instagram, the Book of Face, the social network formerly known as Twitter, and of course, the YouTube, as mentioned previously. We're going to be posting all kinds of harvest updates moving forward. We had a little break, a little hiatus in our social media over the last like week and a half or so, but we're getting back into the swing of things now that the harvest action is picking back up. I do have another special announcement that we just finalized, actually. For those of you that are in the Charlotte, Atlanta, and Tampa areas, we have a few events that we are putting together this fall. Once we get through harvest, we are hitting the road in November. So November 12th, 13th, and 14th. We're going to be in Charlotte, then we're going to be in Atlanta, and then we're going to be in Tampa. We are going to be posting those tickets on our website. You can go to mtgawines.com, click on the shop, and you'll see those tickets available. So if you're listening from any one of those locales or would like to join us at any of those events, please snag your tickets. We'll only have about 20 or so tickets available in each city, and we're going to have some of our favorite friends and other wineries coming along with us. In that same regard, I'm going to be back in Atlanta probably the following week for another tasting. I'm going to be in Missouri once again the week before. We've got all kinds of stuff going on around the country. So please drop us a line if you're interested in attending any of those events, would like more information on hosting your own, whatever the case may be, we will make it happen. Last but certainly not least, even though it is our busiest time of year and we have all kinds of crazy harvest action going, for those of you that are making the journey out to the Napa area, we are bringing folks out to check out the harvest action. So if you really want to kind of dive into what is going on, kind of boots on the ground here, while you're visiting the valley, please, you can slide into our DMs, head to our website to make a tasting appointment, one of those will work just fine so that you can come out and actually see what harvest is like for us. I think that's it. Are those all the updates? There's probably one I'm forgetting, but we'll cover it next week or something like that. Oh, I remember what it is. For those of you that are in our allocation list and wine club, we do have some new releases that are be coming out. That announcement is going to be going out at the end of next week, and we're going to start getting those all set and ready to go. We're tasting through a few wines that have been recently bottled to see if they're ready to rock and roll, or if we're going to have some other wines available in that selection this year. So stay tuned. If you're on our mailing list, in our wine club, any of those good things, you'll have that information in your inbox in about a week or so. Okay, that's it. Those are all the announcements. Let's get into this, shall we? It has been a really nice start to the harvest season. And I do have to apologize. For some reason, last week I had an episode scheduled. Like, let me bring up the YouTube channel real quick, because that's typically where kind of everything posts first and foremost. I was out of town briefly, and there's supposed to be an episode that we posted all about... just, again, kind of diving into more, like, transparency in the wine industry and what was going on. For some reason, it didn't post. I don't know why that was. So we missed an episode last week, which makes me sad. But we're going to get that back up and rolling for you. So we're going to jump right into the harvest side of things rather than kind of going back into the transparency side of things. We're going to post that up next week. So it might be a little bit out of order in terms of the numbering and the sequence, and I might make some references that are like a little bit older than they really are. But it's a good one because it talks a lot about, you know, the wine industry and why, and just kind of the weird way that we try and keep things behind closed doors. It really doesn't make any sense. So stay tuned for that. But now that we are in the throes of the harvest season, I wanted to dive into 2024, how it's looking, all the good stuff that is happening currently in the vineyards, in our cellars, and the whatnots and the what have yous. Okay. I am a little bit zonked, as you might imagine, even though it's been a relatively slow start to the harvest season. The second it starts, it's a lot of window time. You're up late, out late. You're up early. It's some really long days. Luckily, we're in this like little bit of a lull, and we'll pick back up probably, next Tuesday or so. We're going to have some more grapes coming in. It'll be the first batches of our red wines that we're going to be harvesting. We already have all of our white wine, and Brittany, the HBIC herself, has her rosé fermenting away currently right now. So over the last 4 weeks, we've kind of kicked things off and brought in, you know, a few tons of fruit just for kind of the more refreshing wines in our lineup. And that's where a lot of folks are right now. The kind of status update that we have as far as this harvest and kind of where we're at is that we're just at the very beginning of it. Though this has been kind of a warmer, drier season, it's kind of kicked along a little bit quicker, especially when compared to last year. This is a little bit closer to kind of the historical average of what we experience out here. It's still kind of this nice, slow start, which, to be quite honest, I love, because it plays into my hands as a winemaker. And I think many would agree that we just got through this nice little heat spike for a couple of days, 3-4 days, and now it's cooling back off. It was in the 50s this morning. I'm still wearing a sweatshirt right now. So we're starting to feel a little bit more of like the fall weather that's around the corner. It's very likely that we could have another heat spike before the end of the month or even in early October. Not totally unheard of or uncommon, but the way the weather forecast is looking, oh baby, it's going to be an amazing season to finish up with. I just could not be more excited. It's very reminiscent of last year and kind of being able to slow play it a little bit and get fruit into the winery when we want to versus when we have to. Mother Nature, knock on wood, is being so nice to us this year. It's outstanding. I mean, this is going to be a little silly, but all of us winemakers, if you're listening, I have my little like weather app up right now. We all have like 3 or 4 different apps on our phones to kind of decide or figure out kind of what is actually going on. And it'll be a little bit warm today, tomorrow, and then it cools down to like the high 70s for us. There's actually a chance of rain next week. Not a lot of rain, though. It's nothing that's going to be a huge issue. We're talking like less than a 10th of an inch. So that'll be just enough to like knock the dust out of air. Probably not even do that. But it's kind of this nice little wave where we're seeing kind of these dips into the high 80s, low 90s, and then back down to the high 70s, low 80s, which for our purposes is going to allow the fruit to kind of really develop a lot of complexity. Again, we can let it hang out there. There's not going to be a lot of variation. There's not going to be a lot of stress on the vines, which is going to allow us to really, again, slow play it, bring in fruit when we want to versus when we have to, which is a huge distinction. I've talked a lot about the 2022 vintage on this show over the last year and a half, kind of where those wines are, how they're shaping up. And when you have a huge heat event like that, where it's 115 for like 5 days straight in the middle of your harvest, that throws a huge wrench into your plans. And you got to start trying to figure out which way is up and trying to just make shit happen at that point. When you have these cooler trends into the harvest season, it just plays into our hands. We don't have to be in a hurry. We can just kind of let things sit and wait. So that's kind of where we're at currently. But let's go back in time a few weeks and let's talk about how this harvest season was kind of like shaping up and what we're looking at. I mentioned earlier that, you know, this is a little bit of a warmer, drier season. Not even necessarily dry. We got a good amount of rain this year. In fact, the reservoir out at our winery is still completely full. We've used barely any of it, which is amazing. But it was a very nice kind of like easygoing start. We had a little bit of heat, you know, in mid to late August that kind of kicked things along for our white wines. And at that time, we opted to bring in our Pinot Gris. This is about a full month ago. In fact, shoot, when did we bring that in even? Do I still have it on my calendar? Let's see real quick. Hold on. Why is my calendar not working? There we go. Oh, yeah. So it actually, it wasn't quite a month ago. We're talking about, it would have been the 19th or 20th, I think it was. Something like that. I believe it was the 20th of August is when we brought in that fruit. Maybe it was the 16th. I honestly can't even remember. No, that was after a bottling run. See, I'm such a mess already. We've barely started, and I'm like, I can't even remember which way is up right now. Welcome to the harvest season, everybody, when we get delirious, even though we're just getting rolling. So it was about 3 weeks ago, about three full weeks ago that we started bringing in fruit, almost 4 weeks ago. And, you know, for those of you that know kind of our wine style, you know that we like our wines with a little bit more structure, a little bit more refreshing, a little bit of a higher acidity profile. So we typically harvest a little bit earlier than some of our colleagues in and around Napa and Northern California. So, you know, this is kind of the normal and kind of natural progression for any winery, though, is that you typically start with kind of your light and bright wines first, and you slowly start graduating to your bigger, bolder reds as the weeks go on. The shot across the bow for us every season is when people start with their sparkling wines. Very typically, if a sparkling wine producer, we're talking like Domaine Chandon, Mum Napa, Schramsberg, any of those big kind of sparkling wine producers out here, when we see them start their harvest, which is typically early August, maybe as early as late July in some situations, you know, that's when we're like, okay, we've got 2 or 3 weeks and we're going to have fruit coming in. It never fails. 2 or 3 weeks after they get started, we have fruit hitting the deck and we got to start our harvest season as well. So that's a great way to basically have a little bit of a heads up, just to be like, all right, stuff's happening. Let's get ready to go. And as we start preparing for that harvest season and bringing in these white wines, we're doing a handful of things. One is we're making sure that all the equipment actually turns on and works. This is stuff that you use very intensely for a very short time frame, basically 3 months out of the year, maybe. And after that, you turn it off and you don't really use it. Like our press, we stopped using that at the end of November last year, beginning of December. We haven't turned it back on, I don't think, except for maybe some maintenance, like in the spring or early summer, you know, since then. It hasn't been used. So it's worth going in, plugging everything in, making stuff work, making sure that stuff works. And in fact, I have to go in the next like day or two, I have to go pick up a pump that broke and now is fixed because of, you know, issues like that. So you have to do a lot of this kind of maintenance type stuff, and hopefully you can get it done before, you know, stuff actually starts, you know, fruit actually starts coming into the winery. So that's really kind of where we start our harvest season. And many of you have heard this from me, is that basically winemaking is like 50% cleaning and making stuff work. That's realistically what we're doing, is we're just making sure that the equipment that we have on hand, the pumps, the hoses, the presses, the picking bins, the forklift, I mean, all this stuff is just actually going to work. It's when we are, in essence, just glorified janitors and mechanics. And then the next 40% of winemaking is going to be like jerry-rigging stuff to be like, oh, this doesn't work, but we'll make it work somehow, some way. Anyone who's in wine will tell you that there are sometimes, especially during these high impact parts of the year, where you just got to fake it till you make it. And it's nuts. Some of the silly things that we have to do that are just so simple, but they get the job done, and it's kind of bonkers, but we make it work. We just make it work. I wish I had like a good example off the top of my head. I mean, something would be like, you know, after our bottling runs out at the winery, you have just cases and cases and pallets of wine like lining the cave, which means we can't get equipment in and out of the cave. And we have a bunch of barrels that we want to put in the cave because we don't want them sitting outside in the hot sun. So we're having to find creative ways to get like barrels up and over and around pallets of wine. It's totally OSHA approved and totally safe. And we definitely play by the book. We do not take any chances at all. Absolutely not. We don't do that. We make sure that we're legit all the time, every time. That's how it works out here in the good old Napa Valley. But again, you make it work. So once you've gotten through the mess of cleaning things, maintenance, ensuring things that are actually that you need are going to be operational, that's when you're ready for fruit to come in. And you know, this is a question that we get all the time, is, you know, who actually decides when your fruit comes in? And, you know, for us, someone like us, it might be easy to assume. It's like, hey, you actually don't own any vineyards. You're buying fruit from other people. Are they the ones making the call? Are you the one that actually has a hand in the farming and trying to make sure that you get what you want? Or is it some combination of the two? And very typically, it is, in fact, a combination of those two things. You know, a grower, it is pretty funny that at a certain point, The growers do get a little antsy, especially if they're selling grapes to a bunch of people. They want to try and have that harvest season happen pretty quickly and pretty efficiently. Nothing against them, but they're kind of, you know, they feel as though their fruit's on the clock and they want to try and get it in and make sure that it is of a certain quality that they deem, you know, really, really tasty. Now, that may or may not coincide with what we're actually looking for on the winemaking side of things. There are at least a few kind of slightly heated exchanges, and nothing like too dramatic or anything, of like, hey, we're bringing in fruit, we're going to bring yours in too. And I have to be like, the hell you are. You were not doing any of that. You're going to sit out there and let it wait another week because I'm not picking that fruit just yet. It's a very clean and simple, you know, discussion. It's part of the contracts that we sign that we get to have some sort of say in the farming and the quality and when we want that fruit to come in. We do not get that dictated to us. Now, we do try and make it relatively convenient. We're not going to try and, you know, shortchange them in some way, shape, or form, or be, you know, trying to, you know, in essence, treat them like a short order cook. Like, we're going to try and make sure that we are working, you know, well together and there's some sort of synergy between what we want to be doing. So when we're deciding to bring in our Pinot Gris about 3.5 weeks ago, it's a simple text message or an email, and we send that to our farmer, the vineyard that we're sourcing from. We say, hey, we were out in the vineyard. We took some samples. We checked the sugar content, and we checked the pH level. We tasted the grapes. Everything tastes, looks, smells good. Let's go ahead and schedule this pick. And we try and give them like a 4 or 5 day heads up to be like, hey, it's not quite ready just yet, but it's in a good window. And in a few days, we're going to want to have it in at the winery. That's typically how we operate, and it works very, very well. So that's what we did. And that Pinot Gris, we drove out there. We only brought in 2 tons of it this year. So we grabbed a couple of pickup trucks. We drove out there bright and early in the morning, had those bins weighed and loaded up and drove them back to the winery where they went directly into a press and then into barrels for fermentation. And that's something that we kind of rinsed and repeated both for Brittany's Rosé of Grenache that is currently fermenting in barrel. She also brought in a ton of Chenin Blanc that she is adding to her lineup. So that's currently fermenting as well. All those white wines, or at least a lot of white wines out here, will go direct to press, which means we're going to squeeze all the juice out of those grapes right away. We're not going to keep that juice in contact with the skins, the seeds, and the stems. We want to try and remove all that extra kind of plant material as soon as possible because we don't want to extract any color from the skins. We don't want to extract any structure or bitterness from the stems or the tannins from the seeds. We're just going to get all that stuff out of there as quickly as humanly possible to have kind of that nice, clean juice. For those of you that are following us on the Instagram, you may have seen we posted a couple of days ago, maybe, the kind of difference that a few weeks makes. You know, if you're looking at kind of that raw grape juice, it almost looks like raw apple juice. It's kind of that golden, like murky kind of color. And then as that sediment and kind of those solids that do kind of make their way through and the yeast and everything kind of settles out, it starts to clarify kind of on its own. And you'll see kind of that nice kind of crystal, kind of clear, nice white wine, typical like white wine color start to emerge as the weeks go on. So, you know, it's just kind of that matter of time during the process to make all that happen. Now, during the fermentation process for these white wines, we do them all in very small formats. We're talking about, you know, roughly our, you know, 59 to 60 gallon barrels. We do all barrel fermentations for our rosés and white wines. For me, I prefer that stylistically. I really, really like it. We'll use a combination of, you know, stainless steel barrels to keep some of the wine, you know, a little bit brighter, more refreshing. And then we'll use a lot of neutral oak barrels, actually, you know, barrels that have been used quite a few times, just to help them kind of round out the juice kind of, eventually the wine kind of oxidizes a little bit more in those, gives them a little bit more texture, a little bit more body. Even though it's not a new barrel imparting a lot of flavor, they're still really great containers for winemaking. So we use a lot, and I mean a lot, of once used, twice used, and neutral barrels on down the line, especially when it comes to our white wine program. And then we get to the point kind of where we are now, where we're waiting for our red wines to get in. The white wines are fermenting. Some of them are almost done fermenting after a few weeks, and we're preparing for the next wave. Now, it's going to be interesting this year. The way it's kind of panning out for everybody is that it's been kind of this nice mellow start to get the white wines in And you're starting to see some people, eyeball bringing in some Cabernet Sauvignon, which is fairly early in the season. You know, mid-September is like, okay, yeah, that's a pretty good spot. But those are typically like younger vines, maybe vineyards that struggle a little bit more. You know, stuff that maybe isn't going to be like your highest quality stuff, but like pretty good. Like you're going to want to use it as like a blending component. It's probably not going to be the base wine for anything. But as we get into really the third week of September, that's when you're going to start to see more kind of your lighter bodied reds. You're going to see Pinot Noir coming in. We're going to be bringing in some more Grenache for our the Blair Peyton red wine. We're going to be bringing in our Merlot next week. So kind of those lighter to medium body reds are next on the docket. And for those, we went through the vineyards. This happened as I'm talking yesterday. That would have been September 10th. I drove all the way out to Clarksburg, where we're getting our Grenache. We also went out and checked on our Merlot vineyard, just to kind of see where they're at, see if they're ready to go. And it turns out that both of those are just in a beautiful spot. So we're going to bring those in on the same day and get them all processed. We'll be doing some kind of open top fermentations on those, to get them rocking and rolling. That's when we get our good shoulder workout in with our punch downs, twice a day. We do that morning and night. And that way we can also check, give that juice and that eventual wine kind of a good taste, a good smell, and make sure that it is, where we want it to be. Of course, we're still waiting on things like our Cabernet Sauvignon. We do have Cabernet Franc back on the docket for all you Cabernet Franc lovers out there today. But those big reds are still probably at least a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks off. So it'll be closer to the end of September when those bigger reds start coming in. And that's kind of like the natural progression that I was talking about. You start kind of on the lighter side of things, your light reds and medium body reds come in next, and then you have your big bold guys coming in towards the very end to kind of round out the season. This year is looking like, shoot, we might be, in essence, done with our harvest. I mean, all the grapes for us will probably be at the winery by the end of this month or the first week of October, which means it's pretty likely that by the last week of October, we're going to have everything barreled down, in essence, be like done for the season, which is kind of wild because last year we were still pressing stuff off like the week of Thanksgiving and even past that. It was a really long season last year because of the cool weather that we had throughout the growing season. And this year being a little bit more on average, you're like, shoot, if we're done by mid-October or, late October, whew, easy peasy, not bad at all. Love it. Absolutely love it. And the way things are kind of shaping up right now, that's the trajectory that we're on. Looking at that weather app I just looked at, it's like, oh, we got this really nice kind of like even flow of warmer days followed by cooler days coming up. We get to take our time. The fruit's tasting great. Everything's looking, as far as quality goes, really, really awesome out there. Very reminiscent, actually, of like a 2000 and 2012 vintage, kind of coming off a cooler, rainier year like 2011. You're probably going to have some pretty good yields. Maybe a little, within a good margin of error. Maybe some places are a little lower, some places a little higher. But you're going to see just this really great quality. Actually, I'd almost equate this more to like a 2013, probably. 2023 was more like 2012, which is weird because it was a cooler season last year, but the bumper crop and like the huge amount of yields that we saw combined with the quality is just something you don't get all the time. So we made a lot of wine last year, and a lot of it is really, really fucking good. So, that's very much what 2012 provided, but it was kind of the opposite type of season. Like 2012 was warmer, drier, hotter, where 2011 was kind of a cool, rainy year. So it kind of flip-flopped a little ways. But like recent history, within the last, 10, 15 years, I equate like 2023, 2024 to kind of that 2011 through 2013 range, which were just amazing. That was such a stellar 3 year stretch of winemaking. I know like 2011 was a tough go for a lot of people, but hot damn, those wines are rocking right now. They're so good. And you're seeing that happen, with the 2011 or 2023s with this cooler vintage, a long season. You're like, man, these wines are structured and they're intense, but man, they are sexy. They're going to be so good coming down the pipeline. And 2024, with a nice warm summer and growing season that's cooling off into the fall, it's like lining it up to knock it down. This is that point where I think all of us in the industry are kind of like, we're always kind of cautiously optimistic about harvest and the growing season because, let's be honest, like, we don't know what Mother Nature's going to do. She could throw us a curveball at any time that's going to completely derail what we're trying to achieve. And it hasn't happened yet. I need a piece of wood. Just knock on my noggin, I guess, to make sure that she continues to, like, treat us well. It's just, oh, it's awesome. Absolutely love it. So what is next? Like, as we're working through this harvest season, we kind of gave you a little bit of the schedule, kind of where things at, how things are starting. Let me dive into a little bit of, you know, kind of the nuts and bolts of the harvest season. You know, we talked about having to clean all the equipment and, you know, getting these fermentation processes started and kind of checking on those wines. Let's talk about that a little bit. You know, what is it that we are doing during this harvest season to kind of make these wines come to fruition? How are we taking this raw grape juice and getting it to become these amazing wines that you all know and love? Some of it will include, if you go back and you check out the Shopping for Additives episode, I still have my handy dandy catalog right here in front of me. That's when some of those additives and things, including yeast, including sulfites, including enzymes and all kinds of other things, this is when a lot of those things can kind of come into play to help enhance, quote unquote, certain wine projects. We actually had a great group out to the winery yesterday for a tasting, and we were really focused on kind of the wine business and wine making side of things. We talked a lot about additives and kind of what we use in our winemaking. And very, very typically, as many of you who have been listening for a while know, we typically use four things, right? We're going to be using grapes, number one. We'll be using a little bit of yeast, number two, that we'll add to the juice to make that fermentation process happen. And the addition of yeast is pretty simple. You get a little bit of warm water. You have this, in essence, freeze-dried packet of yeast. You dump that in. You let it warm up for, you know, about 10 minutes. What I'll do is add a little bit of that fresh grape juice to it to kind of help mitigate the temperature so it doesn't shock the yeast too much when it gets dumped into whatever fermentation vessel we're using. From there, you dump it in after like another 10 minutes and you get that fermentation process going. It might take like a day or two before it really starts ripping, but at that point, your fermentation is rocking and rolling. Now, there are plenty of things that you can do, you know, as far as like nutrients. Sometimes you might have a really sluggish or a fermentation that stalls out on you, which means any number of things like chemistry-wise could be going wrong in that fermentation process. And that's when you have to do a little bit of analysis. For example, yeast needs a decent amount of like nitrogen as like a nutrient. Think of it as like you taking your multivitamin in the morning. So you might have to supplement with a little bit of that if your fermentation starts getting a little funky and there's not enough nutrients or things to kind of keep that fermentation healthy and keep that fermentation going. It's something that we do on occasion. It's pretty rare, but we like using that kind of yeast multivitamin to make sure that the fermentation process happens clean, efficient, and gets us to where we want to go. Because there are certain vineyards that just their vineyard chemistry and how that fruit comes in, it just doesn't have necessarily what it needs to make a fermentation happen efficiently. So that's a pretty common practice. It's nothing that actually ends up in the final wine because a lot of this stuff either gets eaten up or, of course, you know, filtered out, whether it's through just natural racking processes or if you're going to be filtering, you know, using anything from cross flow to pad filters or reverse osmosis, any of this other stuff to kind of clarify your wines. So those are kind of two big things. One more would be something like tartaric acid. This is something that we've talked about in the past in some of our additive episodes. And this is something that was a huge thing in 2022 after we had that heat spike. The reason why it was such a big thing is because during that big heat spike, you had a lot, and I mean a lot of grapes, turn into raisins. You had the acidity and a lot of the fruit kind of drop out. And you also, probably more importantly, you had a pH level rise significantly to a point where your wine is going to potentially have a lot more issues. Once you get to that like 3.9, especially above like 4.0 pH level, you're in essence asking for trouble. Your wine is going to be much more susceptible to spoilage and having more issues. So this is something that we've been very transparent about with some of our 2022 wines, especially our Cabernet Sauvignon, because that was kind of the last thing to come in that season, is that we added a small amount of tartaric acid. Now, for those that might not have seen our additive episodes, that is one of the three kind of major acid chains that's naturally occurring in grapes. We in essence get it in like a powder like concentrate form that we can add in small doses to decrease the pH level and make our wine more stable. Because to put it into perspective, if I'm spending tens of thousands or someone's spending hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars on fruit, and that fruit and the resulting juice has a really good chance of spoiling because the chemistry is out of whack, are you going to try and fix it and mitigate that, or are you going to roll the dice? That's kind of what we ended up having to deal with in 2022, what a lot of people ended up having to deal with in 2022. So sometimes you just have to hedge that bet. And it's why we try to be as transparent as we can. And I think more producers are trying to do this as well. At least I hope so. Because this is the kind of stuff that can have a huge effect on the wines that you end up drinking and their overall quality. Had we not done something like that in 2022, we might have lost a lot of Cabernet. We might not have been able to make the same quality of wine that some of you are used to getting from us and so on. So, you know, there are times where you might use a little bit something extra to kind of mitigate potential issues. It's rare, especially for us. That is quite literally the first time in 15 years that I've had to do anything like that. But, you know, if it's the difference between saving our business and not losing juice or wine from a harvest, I think it's a pretty easy call to make. And because it's something that is naturally occurring, it's something that is already present in grapes. It's not like we're adding anything that is synthetic. We're simply just adjusting the chemistry with something that is, you know, already naturally there. We just need to kind of bolster it a little bit. So, you know, that's a little bit of my soapbox on, you know, what we do, you know, in the cellar and how we can make adjustments. Now, the other side of that coin is when you have a year like this, or you have a year like 2023, these last couple of seasons, you don't have to do stuff like that necessarily. Because right now, like if I go out and I run labs and check, you know, where our fruit is at from like a chemistry standpoint, it is perfect. It's perfect. I don't have to do anything. We don't have to make any adjustments. We don't have to worry about the stability of the wine. Everything is like in like the most perfect little window. And it makes me so happy because that means we can kind of stick to our guns of using yeast, grapes, barrels, and a very small amount of sulfites. Those are the four things that we use, you know, 99% of the time in our winemaking across everything that we do and everything that we've been doing for 15 years. So when we have these years where we're getting these fermentations going and a lot of these things are kind of rattling around our brain, we have all these lab companies sending us catalogs being like, hey, here are these cool ways you can enhance your wine with all this other stuff. I can just be like, I don't even need to, I can basically throw that catalog away. I don't need that this year because nature has done the job for us. It's just my job now to basically be a steward and get this wine where I want it to go. So those are some of like the considerations that we're making as we get these fermentation processes going. Now, we talked a little bit about the white wines and rosés and kind of what happens as the, let's talk about like what happens when these fermentations are wrapping up. Very typically, like the Pinot Gris right now, we're in essence preparing to put to bed. The fermentation is done. The wine is bone dry. There's no residual sugar in it whatsoever, which is exactly where we want it to be. The wine is in essence like finished, which is right. It's perfect. It's right on time. So what we'll do at that stage is we'll, if a wine's not in barrel already, we'll put it into a barrel of some sort, a storage container of some sort, where it will start its aging process. And that's where the Pinot Gris is right now. It's where all of our wines will eventually end up as we get through that fermentation process and it comes to fruition. At this stage, we have the Pinot Gris in a few different types of barrels. We have two neutral oak barrels, we have two stainless steel barrels, and we have one brand new oak barrel that we've thrown into the mix for the Pinot Gris. And even at this stage, a few weeks in, maybe even a couple of days in, we as winemakers are already kind of creating that spice rack of flavors that we can utilize for blending. Because the wine that's in stainless steel versus the wine that's in neutral oak versus the wine that's in a new oak barrel are all going to be significantly different from one another. And that's how we can start to build complexity within our wines. It also allows us to cut kind of cool stuff from the herd. This is where something like our single barrel wines come from, where it's like, hey, that new oak barrel is just so damn good on its own. We're going to bottle it up by itself, or maybe one of those other barrels just is rock star and we do that on its own. It kind of gives me some flexibility as a winemaker to have some real creative license as, you know, these five components of this wine. What five am I going to use? Am I going to use all of them? Am I going to use half of one? Is there going to be some weird kind of blend across all five of those? We'll see. That's the kind of stuff that we get to consider as we go through the aging process. Now, like something like this, you know, the stainless steel barrels are going to be a little brighter, more refreshing. We mentioned earlier the neutral oak barrels are going to kind of round out those flavors and kind of give the wine a little bit more body, some bigger, broader shoulders. The new oak, of course, is going to have the biggest impact. It's going to add a lot more flavor, a lot more intensity. And it's something that, frankly, we're going to be aging some white wine, probably for close to 18 months or so in new oak, just because it needs that amount of time to get where we want to go, and it tastes so delicious. That's one of our R&D departments that worked out last year. We still have some Pinot Gris from 2023. We bottled up most of it. We have a little bit of it left, a couple of barrels that we are trying kind of a barrel trial on with some new French oak and some acacia, actually. And those things are still in barrel. They've been in barrel for a full year now rather than 6 months. We've doubled the aging time. We're actually going to triple the aging time and probably bottle up at least one of those, maybe both of them, this winter. So as we enter this aging process, that's kind of what we're setting that stage for. As these fermentations wrap up and we're getting these wines in the containers we want them to be in, we're looking, you know, 6 months, 12 months, 18, 24 months down the line, knowing that, hey, this wine is, in essence, kind of the rough draft right now. Over the next few months or the next couple of years, we're going to be fine-tuning it and making sure that this wine actually gets to where we want to go. So it's something that you will enjoy on your dinner table, when or whenever that may be, by the patio, by the pool, whatever the case is. So the amount of work that we're doing right now, the considerations that we're making when it comes to what we use for our fermentation processes, what vessels we're using, when we're harvesting, how we're harvesting, are we hand sorting stuff, are we going direct to press, all these kind of things that we've talked about in this episode, all of that is setting the stage for this aging process and eventually where the wines are going to end up. A lot of us, that really just comes with experience. You know, been making wine for years and years. You kind of understand the process. You're very knowledgeable about it, and you can make some of those executive decisions. For something like the Chenin Blanc that we're making this year, that's a brand new variety. We know the vineyard because we've purchased other fruit from them previously, from other vine rows and other sections of the vineyard. So we have a pretty good idea of where that wine's going to end up, but it's still something brand new to us. It's still something that's like, okay, we have a pretty good idea of where we want it to be, but we're going to have to like throw some stuff at the wall and see what sticks. And if it doesn't, how can we manipulate that wine without using a bunch of nonsense that it's in that catalog to get to where we want to go? And that's where you have to start being really, really creative and figuring out like, hey, what are the next best steps? If something's not really working, what can we do that's going to be as low impact as possible? This is at least our mentality. This isn't everybody's, but this is how we operate. What is going to be as low impact as possible, but still get us where we want to go? You know, we're not going to use a bunch of extracts and additives and things in our wines. So that hamstrings us a little bit because we're not going to use some of those cheat codes. That's fine. But it does create other challenges for us. But luckily, since we've been doing that for so long, we know how to conquer a lot of those challenges. So even when it's a new variety like Chenin Blanc and we're kind of in the throes of harvest and things are crazy, if we taste something or smell something, we're like, that's just not quite where we want it to be. We kind of have our order of operations that will allow us to make these subtle changes or tweaks to get a wine where we want to go or where we want that wine to go. I'm pretty sure most of this episode made sense. It felt like I was rambling quite a bit. Hopefully you all enjoyed it. It's already been 40 minutes. This literally felt like I've been talking for like five. Oh, gosh, it's so crazy how scatterbrained you get as a harvest season kind of kicks into high gear. We're going to be providing a lot more harvest updates Again, please follow us on all of our social networks, especially YouTube and Instagram. That's definitely where we are the most active. But you can also find us on the Book of Face and the social network formerly known as Twitter at MTGA Wines. Will be the handle across all those. Again, if you are in the Charlotte, Atlanta, or Tampa areas, be sure to check out our website. Tickets are going to be available for our events coming up in November. Be sure to snag those before they sell out. For those of you that are waiting for some of our new releases, we'll be sending out those release emails next week. So keep an eye on your email inbox and we will keep you in the loop on the wines that are going to be heading your way this fall. We will be posting up that other episode next week, and I might just post it up sooner than that. Nah, we'll post it up next week to kind of dive into a little bit more of like the transparency and some of the talks that happen kind of behind the curtain of the wine industry and in Napa specifically. We had an amazing group that I mentioned earlier in the show that we talked a lot about kind of the wine business and operations of it. We're going to do another big kind of like wine business episode, and that really kind of came about because this time of year is when us wineries are going through basically 2/3 or 3/4 of our annual budget. This is when it happens. It is very intense. It is very financially intense to get through a harvest season from bottling all the way through bringing in your last bit of fruit and paying those bills and doing everything you got to do. We talked a lot about that, what makes a winery successful, and continue to thrive and all that good stuff. So a little teaser on some of the upcoming episodes that are going to be out this month. Be sure, if you want to be like Drew, shout out to Drew out in Columbia, who submitted a bunch of awesome questions for our August Q&A. Be sure you can drop us a line for our question and answer episode that comes out at the end of every month. You can slide into our DMs on any of those social networks or head to our website, mtgawines.com. Scroll down a little bit. There's an email form that you can fill out, and those will go directly to me so that we can answer some more of your questions here on the show. Have an amazing rest of the week. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Hopefully, my harvest gibberish made some sense today. We will catch you next time on the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.